Hello and welcome to the Avanti Entrepreneur Show. I am Dave Mamano, your host, and we're here to help achievers and business owners and leaders move forward so they can reach their potential. The way I do this is I interview really incredible Rochester movers and shakers, entrepreneurs, business owners. And I tell you, folks, I got a great one today. I have one of the most cutting edge, most moving forward entrepreneurs in Rochester. It's a company, a top three on the Rochester Top 100. And my guest today is Alex Zapasochny.
That was a terrific pronunciation. Thank you. I think you're the first one ever.
I practiced, you know. So Alex, welcome to the show. Really appreciate you being on the show today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And I want to talk about your company. So it's called iCardiac Technologies. And for those that really are kind of reading the business journal and keeping their finger on the pulse of what's going on in Rochester, you are a great company, a lot of exciting things going on, very cutting edge. So what I want to do is I want to read your bio, and then we'll dig a little bit deeper behind the curtain of some of the exciting things you have going on. How's that sound?
Sounds great.
All right. So Alex Zapasochny co-founded iCardiac Technologies in 2006, where he serves as president and CEO. iCardiac commercialized research from the University of Rochester for better determining whether new pharmaceutical products are safe for the heart. And the company now works with a majority of the largest global pharma and biotech companies. Before that, he was general counsel and director of business development for Lonnell Systems, a developer and global supplier of enterprise software, hardware, and services for the electronic security industry. In private practice, Alex has provided legal and business counsel to early stage companies. He has been a trial attorney during his tenure as a New York City prosecutor, a policy division staff member in the Washington headquarters of a presidential campaign, and a co-founder of an award-winning healthcare nonprofit. Alex participates in numerous community activities, including as a member of the Entrepreneurship and Development Working Group of the Finger Lakes Regional Economic Development Council, also as a trustee of the Center for Governmental Research, and as a board member for two charter school organizations. Alex received his undergraduate degree from Cornell University and graduate degrees from the American University and the University of Oxford. Alex, wow. I have to tell you, I'm feeling like a slacker, but congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it. You're no slacker, but I appreciate you saying nice things about me.
Really, really great things. So, Alex, tell us. I'll start. So, first of all, I was on a panel with you a few weeks ago for the Rochester Young Professionals entrepreneurial event that they had, and that's where we met. I got to know you a little bit more. I've been wanting to meet you because obviously I've been hearing great things about you. And so, first of all, before we dive into your company, I want to hear about your journey. And I believe when you were telling me you came from Russia when you were younger, and obviously have tackled America and really done some amazing things here. So if you don't mind, tell us the journey from Russia to here and how this led to you being an entrepreneur.
Sure. So yes, I mean, I was born in the former Soviet Union, and when I was a child, my parents and I, we were political refugees, and we came here in the late 1970s during a time when there was a little bit of an opportunity if you were, especially if you were Jewish, to be able to leave the Soviet Union. And my father was and is a violinist, and so while our first stop was in New York City briefly, his very first audition as a violinist was with the Rochester Philharmonic. And so he came here, he got the position. Of course, also the Eastman School being here was a big draw, and we ended up moving here, and I went to through the Brighton School system, and little by little, I became very interested in entrepreneurship.
Very cool. You know, there's a statistic, and I forgot what it was. And you know, my grandparents are immigrants, and my in-laws are immigrants, and all very successful. And there's something to be said about immigrants coming, and they're so focused on what America has to offer that their percentage of, and I'll just relate it to financial terms, their percentage of becoming millionaires is something like 10 times more than if somebody was born here. And I think it's, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it just seems like immigrants come here and realize all the incredible value that America has to offer for success, and they're so focused on it that they probably buckle down and with a little bit more surgical precision when it comes to planning for their success, that is what contributes to that percentage being so much higher. Do you see that?
Oh, yeah. And actually, both the Kauffman Foundation as well as the National Venture Capital Association has done some studies on this. And without a doubt, immigrants, especially immigrants from kind of non-Western countries, they tend to start companies at a much higher rate. They're responsible for an outsized proportion of companies, technology companies that end up being public. And I think certainly some of it is what you said in terms of their likelihood of being able to buckle down. But I think there's also a different mindset. I think that immigrants sort of by nature, or the children of immigrants, they tend to kind of see life itself as sort of a startup, right? I mean, if you think about people who come here from countries where they weren't particularly open societies, especially with regard to being able to, you know, develop who you are, be free. They really approach life almost as an entrepreneur. They pick up, they move thousands of miles away, oftentimes really cutting off largely their old life, their old contacts with their family, etc. And they come here and they have to start all over. And the sort of mindset that creates to be able to kind of go against adversity and push through it. And also, I think just it redefines in many ways what is really a risk. I mean, you're a risk taker by nature, but by picking up and starting life in a whole new place, which may or may not end up being very hospitable to you. So it's almost not a surprise to me that many of those immigrants and their kids, when it comes to thinking, okay, by starting a company, how big of a risk really is this? I mean, certainly for me, I know that was a big factor. I looked at, while certainly starting a company is more risky than starting a business, it is far less risky than starting your entire life over in a new country and with having to learn a new language, finding a way to fit in. So for me, it actually seemed like the most natural thing in the world to try to be an entrepreneur.
Very true. That's great. That makes a lot of sense. And it's a very pioneering spirit. And that's a good point. I mean, you know, leaving your homeland, people that you know, customs, language, starting. I mean, that is truly the entrepreneurial spirit, right?
Right. Well, and having to get through all of the difficulties and also kind of thinking, well, this is what I'm doing now. There's no stepping back from it. I just have to find a way to make it work.
Right.
And I think that's for those kind of early lean times, which oftentimes, as you know, can last years as an entrepreneur. You need that kind of mindset that there's kind of no going back. You're going to find a way to make it work.
Yeah, that's great. Hey, Alex, we are going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Join Gordon Deal weekdays from 5 to 9 for America's Morning News on 1310 WOKR.
Hi, Dave Amano here, host of the Avanti Entrepreneur Show. I'm here to tell you about a gem that we have here in Rochester, a gem that allows men to look impeccably dressed while not having to spend a fortune. The place is called Incognito Menswear, located right here in Penfield. They have a huge selection of pre-enjoyed quality menswear, as well as a great selection of new, up-to-date fashion items from jeans to modern fit suits. Another benefit of Incognito is that you can trade up. This means that you can trade up your own pre-enjoyed clothing and upgrade your wardrobe on the spot. So not only are their prices already amazing, you can save even more with their unique trade-up offers. Incognito is an amazing local company conveniently located at the Four Corners in Penfield. And get this, during November, they are offering a free pair of Enzo jeans, incredibly fitting and updated designer jeans in a number of colors with any sport coat purchase. These jeans are normally $99. It's a great time to check out Incognito Menswear and Tuck Shop.
Hey folks, Dave Mamato here, host of Avanti Entrepreneur Radio. I'm here to welcome a new sponsor to my show. It's One Down Consulting. A friend of mine, Ron Willie, owns the company. And you know, I look back at when I started in sales and I had a Rolodex and a phone, and we all have access today to the best sales and marketing technology, but most of us are not using it effectively. And let's face it, the companies that leverage technology will outmarket and outsell their competitors. If you need help with all of this technology to make sure you're maximizing your sales and marketing efforts with technology, then Ron Willey and One Down Consulting is your partner. They can really make sure that you are maximizing your sales and marketing technology strategy, your sales process, your marketing and sales alignment. They have implementation of tools for marketing automation, Salesforce automation, CRM, and so much more. I really encourage you to go to onedownconsulting.com to learn more, and or just reach out to me and I'll connect you.
Think of everything you do to provide for your family. A home, food on the table, healthcare, vacations, and saving for your kids' education. It's all good as long as you're alive. But it's only a drop in the bucket of what they'll need if you die without life insurance. Buying term life insurance is not something you can afford to put off. Call the Term Lifeline now for the lowest possible rates on quality term life insurance. Term life rates are at all-time lows, and we can save you up to 70%. If you already have coverage, you could be paying too much. One call could save you thousands of dollars. We have great rates for smokers, too, or if you have health problems. Providing for today is good, but it's not enough if you die prematurely. Call the Term Lifeline today for a free quote. Protect your family and see if you could save up to 70%.
800-430-1481. 800-430-1481. 800-430-1481. That's 800-430-1481.
Innovative Talk Radio, 1310 WOKR.
Okay, we are back with the Avanti Entrepreneur Show. I am Dave Mamano, your host. I'm here with a great, great local entrepreneur today. His name is Alex Zappasochny, right?
Absolutely.
Zappasochny. Yeah. I love it. I'm getting it. my audience will totally be able to pronounce your last name by the end of the show. I guarantee it. And Alex is co-founded iCardiac Technologies, which is a Rochester top 100 company. In fact, it's number 3, and last year was number 4. So the pressure is on, Alex, right?
It is. But, you know, even being the top 3 is already good because you get one of these really nice kind of big wooden trophies. So we're all really looking forward to putting that into the lobby here. So we're happy with 3 already.
That is awesome. Well, with my previous company, Next Step Education Group, I made the Rochester Top 100. But I was at the other end of the spectrum. I was number 98. But I was just super psyched to be on the list.
There you go. No, it is great to be on the list. Absolutely.
Yes. You know, and I've come in second and third for some awards in the past. And you always had that speech in your back pocket to say, it's an honor just to be a finalist, right?
Oh, absolutely. Of course. They did tell me this year that there'll be no speech. We just pick up our trophy and we go.
Right. Keep on moving, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So let's dig into your company. So, it's a great, great Rochester company, something that if anybody knows, you know what you've done and where this company is going, it's incredible news. It's a great Rochester story, and one that makes us proud makes me proud. So for those that don't know what iCardiac Technology does, can you kind of take us behind the curtain?
Sure. So in order for a new medication to be approved for the market, both in the United States and really just about everywhere around the world, there are all sorts of the kind of batteries of tests that need to be included as part of clinical trials. And one of the most important ones is cardiac safety, meaning is it possible that a new drug causes some sort of side effect? And these can be very dangerous, including arrhythmia and sudden cardiac death. And this is applicable to just about every single drug out there because they all have the capacity to disturb the electrical flow in the body and in the heart. And when we started the company about 11 years ago, we started it out of the University of Rochester and a lot of the amazing research that they had been doing in this area. And the key at that point was that while this set of requirements existed that the regulators like the FDA and others wanted everybody to follow, the tools were still relatively imprecise. And what that resulted in was that many drugs that perhaps could have been very helpful to somebody would never see kind of the light of day, or in some cases, in the opposite case, you know, perhaps certain ones looked safe when in reality they weren't. And so our goal was to take what the U of R had done and build upon it to create a better toolkit for being able to figure out more precisely, more clearly, whether or not a drug was going to be safe and therefore should move through the research and development process and be approved, or whether it was dangerous and it was best for the pharmaceutical company that was creating it to basically save their money and try to develop some safer drug. So that's essentially what we started off doing. And over time, we expanded from that mission. Our name is iCardiac, but we actually are broader than that. So we also specialize now in respiratory trials. So for drugs that are for things like COPD and asthma and certain and various other lung-related diseases. And more recently than that, we've actually expanded into another field where we look at different – something called clinical outcome assessment, which is kind of the most kind of modern way of looking at a lot of different effects of drugs.
Interesting. And so tell us about just the you know, kind of how the company is doing. Obviously, it's doing well. And you started it very humbly, right? And but now that I believe you've got some venture capital and you continue to just grow it and fuel it with not only sales of what you're doing, but some funding, some capital as well, correct?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when we started, certainly started extremely humbly. There were three of us who were founders, and we largely were working out of a coffee shop before we had any space and trying to see if others besides us were also seeing the value. But relatively early on in the company's history, we ended up getting venture capital money. Also, Pfizer, which was very interested in what we were doing, ended up being an investor as well because they wanted to see some of our methods succeed. We've really from early days have had to have the kind of infrastructure to do research and development and work for pharma companies. And so it's kind of hard to start, frankly, a life sciences related company or healthcare related company without a good amount of financing. And so we were lucky enough to find that. And then a few years ago, we actually had a partial transaction where we had a private equity firm out from the West Coast step in, and they invested in the company that created a return for some of those venture capitalists and others who invested in us early on, and really allowed us over the last 3 years to kind of take a whole new level take a leap forward in terms of what we've been able to do in growing the company.
Very cool. So where do you see the company in 5 to 10 years? What's the vision?
I mean, there's a number of ways into which we can go. I mean, one, I would say the most relevant thing that our company has done has really still been in the cardiac space. The work that we did and that U of R initially pioneered a couple of years ago truly changed the way cardiac safety testing is done all over the world. And even though that change officially took place in December of 2015, actually implementing those changes and making sure that you're having kind of the majority of the market actually doing kind of new techniques, I mean, that takes a while. So right now we're really in this multi-year process of taking what we've done and making sure that we are in fact changing the way drug developers around the world do cardiac safety. So that's a big part of it, is actually completing that journey. And then, as I mentioned, we've expanded into in recent years into a couple of other areas, including this one called clinical outcome assessment. And we see that certainly as another big piece of the future. That's drug development, because of the introduction of new technologies, is becoming an ever more exciting space. And there's so much left to do to ensure that good drugs are getting good and safe drugs are getting in the market. And right now we feel that really it's just the beginning for us.
Very exciting. So reading your bio, you were a lawyer to begin with, correct?
I was. Yes, absolutely.
So I you know, for me personally, I just love learning about, you know, kind of the spark of entrepreneurship. So you're a lawyer and all of a sudden you're running a company, a very sophisticated medical company. How did that happen?
Sure. So after law school, I spent about 3 years actually as a prosecutor in New York City. So it was definitely kind of far afield from the things I'm doing now. But then at that point, I knew two people actually here in Rochester, a couple by the name of Elena and Rudy Prokopets, who were running a company called Linnell Systems. And the company was growing nicely, and their thought at that point was that they were hoping to go public somewhat soon, and they were looking to find people they could really trust to help them professionalize the organization and sort of position it to be a public company. Now, even though I really did not have the background or the skills to do that, the trust factor to them was so important. And now as an entrepreneur, I can really appreciate why that was the case. And so they were willing to have me come in and learn, and what I thought was going to be kind of a 1 to 2 year exercise really ended up being a 5 year exercise. But it was amazing because we grew extremely fast during that time period. Little by little, at first I was focused certainly on the legal side of what it is that the company was doing. But because it was still a smaller company, I got the chance to jump in whenever I saw something where I could contribute and grow. And I little by little switched over really to the business, a lot of the business portions of what the company was doing. And also in the meantime, learned that those were the things that really excited me. I mean, those were the things I wanted to do. And after that, after the Linnell sold, it was a nice success. I was able to also have relationships with and a reputation. I mean, relationships with people who had funded Linnell, and I was able to leverage that. And in addition to, of course, the contacts and the experience that the co-founders of iCardiac had, and together we were able to create iCardiac kind of on the heels of the Linnell sale.
Very cool. Very cool. So there was three of you working out of coffee shops, and mm-hmm. now how many employees do you have now?
A little over 200.
Wow, that's exciting. How do you know? Like, how do you learn to do that? How do you learn? How did you guys, the three of you, first of all, you know, managing a partnership is very difficult. You know, it's another marriage, and in instead of one wife, you have two wives or husbands, whatever.
Right. Right.
And then growing to 200 people, all while, you know, growing the product very well too. So just, you know, some tips for our listeners who a lot of them are early to, you know, middle stage entrepreneurs, you know, how did you go from, you know, three guys in a coffee shop with a pretty cool idea to learning how to grow and run a 200 person company?
Well, I kind of alluded to it a little bit earlier because trust is so important. So if you look at the way the company started, so one of the other co-founders, a gentleman by the name of Mike Totterman, he and I had been friends since we were seventh graders. So we literally kind of grew up doing homework together and kind of thinking, oh, wouldn't it be interesting someday to do something? But the relationship we built and how well we knew each other was a key part of kind of the trust to be able to really divide and conquer on a lot of the steps you need in growing a business quickly. And our third co-founder was actually Mike's wife. And so, you know, talk about, you know, marriage and trust. And
wow.
I mean, so for us, this was very much about really knowing each other, knowing and being able to acknowledge the strengths and the weaknesses and how to best kind of figure out who was in charge of what. And then the other part was that we were very cognizant that oftentimes you are, or pretty much most of the time, in a startup, you're dealing in an environment where almost everything is unknown, and there really aren't right answers. You just have to kind of operate in this fog and do the best that you can. And one of the things that having this very much trust-based relationship with the co-founders allowed us to do was first of all, I mean, acknowledge that there was really kind of no right or wrong, that everybody, that all of us had the ability and really should, you know, speak up, sort of fight for our positions. But then in the end, once we made up our minds, we would stick together and try to implement it the best we could. And even if we later on would realize that maybe there was a better way to do something, we wouldn't hold that against each other. And so I think that kind of circle of presuming the best about each other, trusting each other's skills, not spending time on, you know, blame or politics or anything like that, allowed us to just, you know, build it at the build the company. And then, of course, honestly, the other thing, though, is once we got past the first year or two and we had other people in the company, we just chose other people who, you know, some we knew, but many of which we didn't. But we chose to promote and put in leadership the people that we felt were really good people who knew how to also pick out those who with whom they had a relationship based on trust, people who cared about others on the team, people who weren't going to be, thinking about how they looked, but rather cared about how the business was growing. So I think putting the early leaders into roles that were really more about kind of the human factors than they were necessarily about the technology or the science, although obviously, you know, our goal was to try to find people who could do both, really helped the company to grow in the way that it did over the years.
That's great. When we were on the panel a couple weeks ago talking to Rochester Young Professionals, a lot of them were asking questions about how do we find our role within the company? And you said that's the first thing you did with your partners is finding out what you're good at, what they're good at, putting people in their respective kind of role of superpower. I think it's so important, you know, if you read, I think you talked about it too, the book called The E-Myth, Michael Gerber,
mm-hmm.
where, yep. you know, he used the metaphor where the woman had a pie-making company and she could only grow so far making the pies herself. And at some point she had to teach somebody to make the pies and figure out how to franchise, grow the company from there. And, you know, and I've learned that too as an entrepreneur over the years. You know, in the beginning, I think you try to do everything. And sometimes it's because you have to, right? But as, you know, the company grows, God willing, you get more cash in and you can start to delegate, you really have to be introspective and look at the mirror and say, what's my best role within this company? And then start to delegate everything else. I think that's the true sign of a good leader that can effectively delegate. And we talk about, you know, don't abdicate, right? Delegate, set up systems so that you could inspect what you expect. And I learned that from a good friend of mine, Darren Hardy, who's a former publisher of Success Magazine. And so you guys had to do that right from the start, right? You and your two other partners, who's going to be president, et cetera. And was it that just kind of a good discussion about, you know, who's got the right qualifications or maybe that's the right personality and skills to take each role?
Yeah, no, it certainly started off that way. But one of the other things I think helped us, I mean, I saw it at that point originally as a burden, but it really in the end was, when I look back at it, was actually a big benefit to us, is because we are in the clinical trial space, there's so many regulations, and as part of those regulations, you actually have to write down every single step of a clinical trial, every single element of how software works, how every person works. And again, it felt like the least entrepreneurial thing that I was working on at that point, because it felt like, hey, we're a startup. Why are we, you know, busy with all of the, like, writing everything down and, you know, as though we're some big company. But what it allowed us to do, or it really forced us to do, was it forced us to think about how we were doing things, you know, what the standards were of how we were supposed to do them, who was supposed to do them. And it allowed us to define things really well. So one, when we brought in new people, it was actually amazingly helpful because they, instead of just sort of shadowing people and trying to figure things out by, you know, trial and error, they had a real guide on how to do things. And in some ways, without knowing it, we actually ended up following the advice in that book, E-Myth, that we were almost thinking of it like a franchise model, right? If you were to take your business and turn it over to somebody else to run, you know, did you write down everything in such a way that where you're really not just capturing the processes, but you're capturing them in a way that sort of embodies what is special about your business, what's unique about your business. And so, yeah, I mean, for us, that hugely helped us to scale effectively, because as you know, I mean, scaling effectively, it's one of the things that all entrepreneurs certainly worry about. And that's why so many companies end up getting really stuck at some number of millions of dollars in revenue, because those companies are not able to scale beyond the individual capacities of their founder or founders when they're not willing to let go.
Very true. Yeah, on that note, we're going to have to take a quick break. But you're right, Alex. It's the entrepreneur is often the biggest visionary, but also the biggest bottleneck, right? So So we'll be back. I'm talking to Alex Zapasochny, and he is the co-founder of iCardiac Technologies. We'll be back in a minute.
Fox News' Tim Shalhoub takes on the news stories of the day with comedic insight. Weekdays from 3 to 6 on WOKR.
Hi, Dave Amano here, host of the Avanti Entrepreneur Show. I'm here to tell you about a gem that we have here in Rochester, a gem that allows men to look impeccably dressed while not having to spend a fortune. The place is called Incognito Menswear, located right here in Penfield. They have a huge selection of pre-enjoyed quality menswear, as well as a great selection of new, up-to-date fashion items from jeans to modern fit suits. Another benefit of Incognito is that you can trade up. This means that you can trade up your own pre-enjoyed clothing and upgrade your wardrobe on the spot. So not only are their prices already amazing, you can save even more with their unique trade-up offers. Incognito is an amazing local company conveniently located at the Four Corners in Penfield. And get this, during November, they are offering a free pair of Enzo jeans, incredibly fitting and updated designer jeans in a number of colors with any sport coat purchase. These jeans are normally $99. It's a great time to check out Incognito Menswear and Tuck Shop.
Boy, man, I had a rough night's sleep. Boy, whew, I got a letter from the IRS yesterday, and I just couldn't sleep. Man, I'm dying here. Somebody help me.
IRS problems affect more than just your finances. If you're ready to take back control of your life and you owe more than $10,000, you need to call the Tax Doctor. Their expert staff can immediately protect you from the IRS and state collectors and get you the best possible tax settlement guaranteed. The IRS has recently released new programs geared in helping struggling taxpayers, where you may qualify to settle your tax debt and wipe out up to 85% or more of what you currently owe. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call the Tax Doctor right now. See if you qualify to pay less. 800-989-1694. 800-989-1694. 800-989-1694. Again, 800-989-1694.
If you're struggling to pay or haven't been making your student loan payments, listen carefully to this urgent alert. Have you been out of school for 10 or more years and you're still making your student loan payments? Are your student loans past due or even in default? Can't go back to school because of an old student loan problem? We can help you if you qualify. Your student loans can be taken out of default. We can stop the wage garnishments, stop the collection calls, and stop the seizure of your tax refund. Give yourself a break. Stop the stress and see if we can help you reduce your student loan payments. One quick 10-minute call could solve them right now. So call the Student Loan Helpline now.
800-419-2201, 800-419-2201, 800-419-2201, that's 800-419-2201.
This is a fee-based document preparation service to help you access free government programs. Call for complete details, not available in all states.
Innovative Talk Radio, 1310 WOKR.
We are back. I am Dave Mamano. Entrepreneur Show. We have a great, great, awesome Rochester entrepreneur today, Alex Zapasochny from he is co-founder of iCardiac Technologies, which is a Rochester top 100 company. In fact, it's number three, folks, this year, and last year was number four. Doing some great, great things in the medical world right here from Rochester, New York. And we're talking a little bit. We learned a lot about the company as far as what it does, and now we're starting to learn a little bit more about just how Alex and his two partners, who are husband and wife, by the way, really started, you know, from scratch, three people in a coffee shop, and now have grown it to over 200 people, brought in some capital, and it's just a thriving, thriving company with a very, very exciting future. So, Alex, there are a lot of, we'll say, beginning to middle stage entrepreneurs that listen to the show, and they're looking to kind of be where you are. So if you had to, if you were going to give all my listeners, two or three books for the holidays that will help them grow to their next level in business, what would those books be and why?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think that one of the books that I read recently, which I think was just terrific, is it's called The Hard Thing About Hard Things. And it's by the author's name. I'm blanking on it slightly. It's Ben Horowitz.
Yep.
And he's part of the duo that created Andreessen Horowitz, which is a very forward-looking venture capital firm out in the West Coast. And part of what makes Ben Horowitz's book quite different is that instead of focusing on all of the different ways that businesses get built, he focuses on all the things that go wrong, all the things that entrepreneurs in many ways aren't necessarily prepared for, really prepared for. And that has to do with, you know, what happens when you don't meet your projections? What happens when suddenly, you know, the wonderful employee that you hired and put in charge of all sorts of things ends up just changing on you or not being able to hack it? What I think it ultimately does is it really explains the emotional and kind of psychological ups and downs that almost all entrepreneurs end up going through. And in some ways, you, in my mind, have to, if I were to pick kind of one quality which really sets successful entrepreneurs apart that I've certainly met and worked with, it's the ability to deal with those ups and downs, deal with having to constantly work in an environment where you have very limited information, little time, little resources, and finding a way to just move on day after day and not letting it kind of exhaust you or get you down to the point where you just start making bad decisions. And I think that book really, you know, certainly spoke to me. And I think for those who are thinking of being entrepreneurs or who are really thinking about taking it to the next level, reading it helps to perhaps show you, you know, is this the ride you want, or is it perhaps something different? So that's one book. And then the second one, actually, I'll say quickly, is the one that you mentioned a few minutes ago. I think that The E-Myth is a great book. And I think it's a great book also because of this one feature that it talks about, this difference between working on a business and working in a business, with the idea being that most people, when they start a business, they focus on sort of the subject matter of, you know, expertise of it. So, for instance, a lawyer starting a law firm or a chef starting a restaurant, and they focus on kind of the product or what they think is the main product. But in reality, a company cannot scale unless you as the owner, and you as the owner, you're really the only one in a position to really work on the business and see the broader picture. And you must find a way to delegate and must find a way to not think from sort of inside the business, but really think of everything on a more strategic level. So I would say those two books to start with. And then after that, I don't know. But those are a good start.
I've read both of those books, and they're both very different books. They're both very, very good books. And a little side note about the hard things about hard things is he talks about they just kind of he takes credit for he and his team for the putting things in the cloud, right? Do you remember that?
A lot of cloud. Yep.
Yeah, and so they and that, and now, you know, what does that mean? We put it in the cloud, right? It's on a server someplace, I guess. But they started talking about that it was in the cloud, and then that became like the lexicon for, you know, the cloud-based services, Dropbox. It's in the cloud. It's in the cloud. What does that mean? But kind of a cool little claim to fame, right?
Yeah. No. And I think that his perspective is just great. And I think you don't hear it enough among entrepreneurs.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he gave you the real story, right? I mean, some of those emails that were sent by his boss, and a lot of candid, you know, conversations going on there, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely, and I think that, you know, and I don't want it to sound like if somebody reads that book and says, "Oh boy, I wouldn't want to be part of that," that they should just sort of stop thinking about entrepreneurship. But I think that there are other ways to be an entrepreneur or be part of the entrepreneurial journey without necessarily being especially kind of, you know, the founding entrepreneur. Oftentimes, a lot of this is about finding perhaps a team of people. Maybe that team has already started and you're coming in as an early entrepreneur, but you're at least kind of coming in a couple years after some of those initial years when things are the most uncertain, or maybe you're much calmer when you find the right one or two people. And maybe the other way to think about it is, you know, even if you yourself are a very calm person and you know how to deal with the emotional ups and downs and the uncertainty, to me, that reading that book creates also a great filter for choosing your co-founders and your early employees. So to me, that there are all sorts of ways to think about this topic for early entrepreneurs.
That's great. So your company, I imagine it keeps you extremely busy, and I'm sure it could be 24/7 if you allow it to be, but you seem like a well-balanced family guy. And, you know, when I saw you a few weeks ago, you look pretty fit and healthy. So do you have some instigative systems in your life to make sure that you're a well-balanced entrepreneur?
And I think you've hit upon something that's absolutely critical, right? Because, I mean, I've been at this now, I mean, it's about 11 and a half years ago when we started the company. Mm-hmm. So if I, you know, didn't think about balance, I think I would have kind of burned out long ago. There's a number of things. I mean, I'd love spending time outside and in nature, especially when the weather's warm. I mean, that's hugely refreshing. I have two kids, one just entered high school. It's her birthday actually today. And then also, my son who entered sixth grade. So there are all sorts of activities and they need to get rides and things like that. And in some ways, while perhaps that seems like a lot of work, I mean, for me, it's sort of it forces me to kind of focus on family and kind of pulls me away from thoughts about the company. And, you know, my wife is wonderful and we have all sorts of hobbies and friends. And I mean, absolutely. To me, all of those things are key. I do work out. That's really important. Health is really important. That's one of the things that certainly all entrepreneurs probably or people who are aspiring entrepreneurs, they need to remember that as important as it is to be a good entrepreneur, it can only and should only be a part of life. And part of that is also I find that oftentimes my best and most creative ideas come when I'm not so much focused on the company, but I'm on vacation. Off with my wife and, you know, sitting in a movie or whatever. I mean, sometimes that clarity and that relaxation allows you to see things more broadly than when you're sitting in the office and kind of staring at the problem too intently.
Totally agree. When, you know, it's like when you least expect it, and it's usually when your synapses are kind of reconnecting in a different way, you'll get some great ideas for your business and for your life. And glad to see you're staying healthy, because I mean the pressure's on for you with the name of iCardiac. I mean you better be a pretty healthy guy, right?
That's true. I'd never really thought of that before, but you're right. I represent a brand of sorts. Yes,
that's true. I mean, you don't want to be like a fat gym club owner, right? So everybody, I'm talking to Alex Zappasochny. Love this name, Zappasochny. And he has founded iCardiac Technologies and really done some great, great things in Rochester. Alex, you know, as entrepreneurs, we certainly always like to put our best foot forward when it comes to marketing and the impression. But we know that behind every entrepreneur's curtain, there's a roller coaster ride. And I know that I have fallen on my face quite often. And I think the difference between successful entrepreneurs is that they, the ones that are successful will get up and say, hey, that was a learning experience. Let me get on to, 2.0, because I just learned from that fall, as they say, you know, failing forward. Do you have any stories that you can share with us about, you know, in your journey so far with the company? Or have there been some times when you were on that roller coaster and, took a, the ride was going down, maybe through the dark tunnel for a little while, but you guys got out of it and came back up again?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we have actually quite a few stories like that. I'll kind of give one quickly. At one point, we were trying to branch out from from what we were doing, and we were actually looking to potentially do something in the clinical space, basically for doctors. And we ended up kind of running this experiment about how some of our software applies to it. And while that particular application never worked out, we ended up actually striking a relationship with a company, with the hardware company that we were working with, that ended up being the backbone of so much of really being our most important vendor for years and years afterward. And, you know, there's one example where, most of the time, as long as you don't sink too much time or money into working on kind of new things, you're almost always learning something that's quite valuable that you can take into, you know, the next chapter of what the company's doing.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. You know, I mean, I think a lot of people say they want to be entrepreneurs because it looks sexy, I think the bottom line is any entrepreneur that has, jumped in head first realizes quickly that It's kind of like owning a restaurant. It looks really cool from the outside, but when you're on the inside, it's a little bit different story. When you have to work every Friday and Saturday night, and you're sometimes doing dishes and counting every napkin that falls on the floor.
Right, right. No, and actually, I actually briefly was a co-owner of a restaurant. So,
oh, you were? Okay.
So your example actually speaks to me.
you know what I'm talking about. Was it here in Rochester? Yes.
It was here in Rochester. Was in the East End. I'll have to say, I mean, it's, I mean, being an entrepreneur is hard. Being a restaurant owner, to me anyway, was even harder. So, yeah. But all of it's difficult, and then all of it comes down to, you know, some combination of grit and determination and just the sense also that when it does work, and if you stick with it long enough and work hard enough and keep your mind open to how to do things and improve things. I also think there's really nothing better if that's what you want to do and you find a way to succeed. I mean, the actually being an entrepreneur and being in charge of kind of creating your environment and just creating things, putting things out into the world that you want to see there and care about. It's an amazing feeling.
I agree with you. I think if it's your calling, there is nothing better. Certainly like anything else, like you said, it's full of ups and downs and some sleepless nights, but, to be in control of your own destiny and to be able to create your own standards and product and culture and quality and put your own fingerprint on the world, it's my calling. And for me, it's my drug of choice. There's nothing better. And after 22 years of being an entrepreneur, I am unemployable. And as the world changes, we have to adjust and reinvent. There's nothing like the crazy, wild roller coaster ride of starting your own business, right?
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. I mean, I think that while I can maybe see myself maybe being employed for short periods of time as some sort of break between entrepreneurial gigs.
Right, yeah. A little pit stop, huh?
Yeah, a little pit stop, but yeah, I think for me, it maybe harkens back to the beginning of our conversation, when, you know, coming from that background of having my family come from the Soviet Union, you know, I wanted to do the sort of things that, I kind of thought that my parents and grandparents really didn't have a chance to do. And I think that really does come down to being in control of your own destiny and being able to really be free to be who you are and to try to create the things you want to create. So, you know, for me, it's been an amazing journey, and I continue to love it every year.
Love it. Alex, thank you so much. Truly, truly appreciate it. We, believe it or not, we have to get going. That was a quick hour. But Alex, if people want to get in touch with you just to connect, learn more about what you're doing, what is the best way to connect with you?
Sure. Probably the easiest way is to go on LinkedIn. I'm happy to have my contact information on there. In case they don't know how to spell Zapisochny, they of course can go to www.icardiac.com and you'll see me on there. You can also get in touch with me directly through our website.
Yep. And they can always email me at david@davidmamano.com and I will connect you with Alex. So Alex, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time. Congratulations on all your massive success. Very, very happy for you. You're a proud feather in Rochester's cap, and I wish you continued success.
Thank you very much for having me.
And thank you, Avanti Entrepreneurs. Appreciate you listening. And last but not least, if you or someone you know would like to be considered to be a guest on my show, Rochester business owner, founder, just mover and shaker in the business world in the Rochester community, please throw me an email, david@davidmamano.com. And Mamano is M-A-M-M-A-N-O. Make sure to check us out on the web at davidmamano.com. Make it a great day and stay awesome.
Serving Canandaigua and Rochester's East Side. 1310 WOKR.